Good evening, you all. I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. My name is Dick. At this time, we begin the technical match, as we've done for the last 35 years, starting in September of 1982. The purpose of the TechNet is to gather curious radio amateurs who want to know more about wireless equipment. How does it work? How to make it work better? The magic of radio, they want to understand it a little bit more. And there's a lot of magic to it. The person signs into the technical net by giving me and Paul, and pretty soon Roy, somebody tapping on the tubes to give us your call letters, your name. Try to remember to give me your name. Now you think I know you, I'm very forgetful. And the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the technical net. Tonight's going to be a little bit unusual. Let me drop the tape. I have to leave the TechNet before 9:30 in order to pick somebody up at the airport, so I will be discontinuing at 9:30. And either Roy or Paul will continue beyond that point. Tonight, we probably have the first check-in of Roy, AC2GS, who will in the future be manning the mailbag, our new mailbag person. He hasn't had a chance to announce to people that he's going to be doing this. It only came up in the last few days. I made him the offer for the third time, and he accepted. So people don't yet know his email address, and therefore they haven't been sending him a mailbag on his submittals. But they will be in the future week. John KC2WGB, our previous mailbag person, would at times get as many as 75 emails, 75 communications per week from people who had further questions. They had questions by that method of communication because they didn't yet have the right equipment, the right license, so on, to sign that directly. The majority of the TechNet is a verbal over the air. Let me drop it. Now, Roy, AC2GS, has a significant background. He is the TechNet leader for the KCRC. Kings County Radio Club has a TechNet that he runs on the second and fourth Wednesday of every month, starting at 9 p.m. KCRC is the 146.73 machine, which has an unusual PL of 88.5. If Roy is there, he's going to give us his email address and any other introductions he'd like to give us so that he can be gathering mail in the future. AC2GS, if you're there, pick up Roy, K2RIW, and check that.
Thank you, Dick. This is AC2GS. It's an honor to take up this responsibility. You know, it was so well done by Mel, K2KEY, and John, KCWGB. So those are some big shoes to try and fill, but I will try nevertheless. The email address that I've set up for this experience is technet@alphacharlie2golfsierra.com. Once again, technet@alphacharlie2golfsierra.com. You know, don't use the phonetics, though. Use the letters, ac2gs.com. And I'll collect the emails and do the mailbag next week, hopefully, if I get any email from you guys.
Very fine, John, and welcome aboard. Roy, welcome aboard. And so you guys, if you have the slightest question, please email Roy at TechNet Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra. TechNet AC2GS. I think there's no punctuation in there. TechNet AC2GS.com. Wait a minute. TechNet at Alpha Charlie 2 GS.com. So it's TechNet at Alpha Charlie 2 GS.com. Is that true, Roy? Give me a correction on that.
Yes. Yes, Dick, it's true. It's technet at ac2gs.com. All email addresses use that funny little at symbol, so I do as well.
I suddenly figured out that the at has to be there before the ac2gs because you don't put at.com, so to speak. You don't combine them that way. Okay. And Roy, if you were able to hang in there tonight, if anybody has questions on which you have experience, please chime in and because I'm not the only person with answers. I'm the interlocutor, I used to say in Fort Bill days. I tried to keep it all running smoothly with them. Now, the group is AC2GS, Roy, Paul, WS2N, with the space report, and Dick, K2RIW, with somebody knocking on the tubes at the repeater. It's probably KE2EJ. Eric, do you want us to stand by while you do some of your repairs at this time? KE2EJ, if you say something, we'll listen. If you don't, we'll just continue. KE2EJ, if he wants to say something. K2RIW in the tech net.
K2RIW, K2EJ. Yeah, I'm up here. Actually, I'm going to try to be a little bit as again. I got a couple things to do, but I'll leave you alone for a little while.
Okay, so we might be getting an interruption as Eric is doing his repairs. And once again, to repeat, I will be leaving you guys before 9:30 in order to pick up somebody at the airport. And at that time, either Roy and or Paul, some combination of Roy and Paul, will continue the rest of the technet until they get tired or run out of material. Okay, now it's time to sign in. If you do have a question or a comment on any of the above, any subject of interest to ham radio operators, please give me your call letters and name and the word yes at this time, which means you do have a question or a comment. K2RIW listening.
And WS2N Paul. Welcome aboard, Roy. Very, very good. And Dick, I will be here. We'll be here for the duration of the night, hopefully. Back to you, Dick.
Very fine, Paul. Okay, for you guys that want to check in, please give me your call letters and name right now. K2RIW.
Hello, Delta 2, November, Oscar Uniform. Name here is Ben Brower at the November. And yes, I do have a comment and question.
Okay, November Delta 2, November, Oscar Uniform, I think. And I'm a little bit slow. Please tell me your name one more time.
Was Kilo Delta 2, November, Oscar Uniform. Name here is Ben Brower Echo November.
Okay, we got you that time, Ben. Ben's the first one to sign in. Who's the next person to sign in with a question or a comment for the net? Call letters and name, please. Don't wait for the beep at this time. Just give us your call letters and name at this time.
Let's see, Joe.
Okay, that was a complete dropout except for Joe. Joe, please give me your call letters.
W2OSD.
Okay. W2OSD. W2 Oscar Sierra Delta. Is that what it is, Joe?
E2 Oscar Foxtrot Delta, Roger.
Oscar Foxtrot Delta, W2. We got you, Joe. Okay, we got Ben and Joe. Who else to sign in? Please give me your call letters and name at this time. K2RIW.
KT2, Mike Tango Papa.
Okay, that sounded like Kilo Echo 2, Mike Tango Papa, Andy. Is that true, Andy?
Yep, it's Kilo Delta 2, Mike Tango Papa, but everything else.
Okay, Kilo Delta 2. We got you, Andy. So we got Ben, Joe, and Andy. One more call. Anyone else to give us a check-in because you do have a question or a comment? Please give me your call letters, mostly phonetically, and name at this time, K2LIW.
Kilo Delta 2, November Whiskey Golf. The name is Angel.
Okay, Kilo Delta 2, November Whiskey Golf. We got you, Angel. Okay, we got more than enough to get started. Ben, Kilo Delta 2, November Oscar Uniform. Go right ahead with your question or comment. You're number one on the runway, Ben.
All right. So I have a tri-band mobile antenna up on a mast in my backyard, and people say I should put a ground plane on it and have radios, and I'm not sure whether to make them, what length to make them. I know people say for 2 meters and one for each band. But also, I measured it in my SWR meter. The SWR is pretty much perfect. So I'm wondering if I even... But everyone keeps reading them to me. What's your opinion on that?
Very fine, Ben. There's a whole lot of missing information here. You've got a tri-band antenna. I presume that means 20, 15, and 10. Is it a horizontally polarized Yagi, or is it a vertically polarized monopole? It's up on a mast. That would be vertically polarized if it's up on a mast. Well, either way, how high up did you put it? manufacturer recommend a set of radios. I mean, there are some designs of vertically polarized ground plane-like antennas where the radiator, the resonator, is half-wave long electronically instead of quarter-wave long, in which case it almost requires no ground plane radios at all. So, for the missing information, polarization, altitude, bands, manufacturer's recommendation, and is he bragging that it's a half-wave type? As you can tell, I need quite a bit of information there, Ben. KD2NOU, K2LIW, you got it, Ben.
It's actually a mobile antenna for 2 meters, 220, and 440, and it's up about 25 feet. Normally, you would probably use your car as a ground plane, but it's located at my house in my backyard, up about 25 feet.
Okay. Boy, was there a lot of missing information. So it's a tri-bander on 2 meters, 220, and 440, if I understand correctly. I think you're saying it was intended for a mobile operation. Okay. Does that mean it's a mag mount or something that normally gets screwed to the sheet metal of the car? And when it comes to the radios, if you do want maximum performance, if it happens to be a quarter wave type, and to be on 2 meters, if they didn't brag that it's a half wave or 5/8, most likely it's quarter wave, it will work better with ground plane radios. How well the antenna radiates, whether or not it lights up your coax cable, the outside of the coax cable, with a common mode current, as they call it, so that the cable becomes part of the antenna, which isn't always desirable, whether or not it does that is a function of, is it half wave, is it quarter wave on the radios, and the fact that the standing wave ratio is good, is it necessary but not sufficient? Let me drop it. In other words, you could have an antenna that drastically needs radials and or a balancing device to stop the current from crawling down the cable and radiating from the cable, which could be changing the pattern and creating a sometimes television interference. That could be happening, which is undesirable, and the standing wave ratio could be beautiful, and vice versa. So standing wave ratio being good is a necessary but not sufficient. If it was intended to be mounted to the sheet metal of an automobile, mag mount or kind screwed down, to put on radials, yes, will usually be helpful. Usually it will be helpful at stopping the current from crawling down the coax cable. In the case of a HF antenna mounted on the ground, let me drop it. Because the ground is so nearby, it's very easy to launch RF current into that earth. And earth is a volumetric lossy material, and you can lose quite a bit of performance. Like 70% of the performance could be heating up the worms, so to speak, instead of radiating to space on an HF antenna on the ground without sufficient radials. Therefore, you put a zillion radials down at HF frequencies. At VHF frequencies, when it's 25 feet in the air, your coupling into the earth is almost zero. Your only real coupling now you've got to worry about is to avoid the coupling into the outside of the coax transmission line. Usually, three ground plane radios on each band will do that very nicely. So, three quarter wavelength long rods on each band, and quite often you get the best performance if they're tilted down, oh, something like a 30 degree angle below the horizon, so to speak, tilted down, gives you the ground plane radio performance and good standing wave ratio. And so three radios on each of those bands should do the job pretty well. That's my guess. Drag your feet when I pass it back to you, Ben, and see if we have other people with experience on this who want to express their opinion. KD2NOU with some delay, K2RIW in the TechNet. Looks like we have nobody with opinions on this one right now, Ben. So go ahead, Ben, with your further questions, comments, or fills.
Roger that, Dick. Yeah, I've also noticed some RF problems when it comes back into my stack. Like sometimes my computer freaks out and my keyboard turns off. I was wondering if that has anything to do with it, and maybe the RF coming back. And yeah, I'm definitely going to try to add some radios, and I was also confused on the link because I was going to put one of those chassis mount connectors with SO239s on both sides, and then make radios out of the four holes on each side of the connector. Over to you, Dick.
And whether you put up three radios or four radios, tilt it down at about a 30-degree angle from the horizon, as usual way, is your choice. And your next question is going to be, can I group the radios together on the four holes of the SO239? The answer is absolutely yes. You can group them together. Quarter wavelength long, a quarter wavelength at 2 meters, approximately 19 inches, for instance, 19-inch rods, a quarter wavelength at 2 meters. And you can calculate what it's like on the other bands. It's not super critical. The fact that you don't have the ground plane radios, and the fact that the RF appears to be getting in the shack and changing your computer characteristics is a pretty strong clue that you got RF coming down the outside of the coax cable because of a lack of a counterpoise, as they call it, the ground plane radial system. You can now, with those ground plane radials, it'll get better. You can use belt and suspenders if you want to by also making a poor man's balance. In other words, take your transmission line just below the antenna, make two or three turns at some reasonable diameter taped together as a series RF choke. That will also drastically limit the amount of RF energy crawling down the outside of the cable, coming into the shack and disturbing your computer. So the combination of radials and or that poor man's RF choke, which is the cheap way of putting in a balance. You don't really need a balance in your case. Once you make those changes, I'd like to believe your computer interference will disappear. Your performance on the actual ham band probably won't change a great deal, although it could get a little bit better, because the radiation on the cable means the cable is becoming part of the antenna. And sometimes the cable gives you funny radiation patterns. It could even slightly create a null on the horizon, so to speak, where you don't want one to be. As you make these changes, please come back and tell us what you've observed.
Repeater, time out.
As I was saying, Ben, as you make these changes, please come back and tell us how well it worked, even if it didn't work. ND2NOU for any other final. K2LIW in TechNet, you've got it, Ben.
Good, Dick. I'm going to go ahead and add those and see what changes. And the call of Kilo Delta 2, November Off Uniform. Thanks for the advice, and back to you.
Okay, Joe is next. If I can read my sloppy writing. Whiskey 2, Oscar Foxtrot Delta. Go right ahead, Joe, K2LIW. One more call for Joe. Whiskey 2, Oscar Foxtrot Delta. Go right ahead, Joe. KQRIW in the TechNet. Okay, maybe Joe got called away. I think it's Andy next. Andy. Kilo Delta 2, Mike Tango Papa. Go right ahead, Andy. KQRIW.
My question is less technical, it's more usage. I'm on a single band J2 mobile now at my home, but I'm thinking about I'm probably going to get an HD tri-band. And I'm just wondering, for this group, what kind of activity will I expect to hear on the 1.25 meter band? Is it pretty active on the island or around the New York area?
I'm hearing you very well, Andy, on the input. You're a little bit noisy through the machine, and your audio is a little bit low, so speak a little louder into the mic. It'll help. And I think you're saying the 1.2 meter band. I think you mean the 220 band. I'm not sure there's a huge amount of activity on 220. That was one of your questions. I forget what other band you were asking about. 2 meters is a lot of activity on Long Island area, both for horizontal polarization, single sideband people who gather at 144-200, as well as the FM people with their repeaters and simplex. The between 144 and 148, 146 and 148. Lots and lots of activity on 2 meters. 220, I think the amount of activity is kind of light. 440, there's a good deal of activity on Long Island on the 70 centimeter band. But it is my guess the 220 band has 25% of the activity of the other two bands, 2 meters and 440. So 2 meters and 440 are major bands. 220 is quite light, in my opinion. And I'm going to pass it out for the net for people to correct me if I'm wrong on that one. That's both good and bad. If you want some privacy, to have a rag shoot with somebody, the fact that the activity on 220 is light could be to your advantage. The disadvantage is if you're driving around and want to have somebody to talk to, you might not find anybody to talk to on 220. I don't know. By way of the repeater directory from ARRL, they'll know exactly how many 220 repeaters there are and where they're located. So let me pass it back to you, Andy. Drag your feet in case other people want to push their comment on this particular. Give us their comments on the subject. KD2, Mike Tango Papa.
Repeaters, time out.
KD2, Mike Tango Papa. With some delay, T2RI3 in the TechNet.
AC2GS.
Go right ahead, Roy. How is the 220 activity to your knowledge? You got it, Roy. Glad to hear from you.
Always glad to be heard. 220 is active but very spotty. There are a few people who really get into that band and they use it, so it's a great band if your friends are the guys who are using it. If your friends are not the guys using it, it's very lonely out there. I think as far as the number of repeaters that are set up on the different bands, I think UHF has the biggest number of just total metropolitan repeats, followed by VHF. Then you get into problems with 220 and even worse with 1.2 gigahertz. They're very few, they're far between. The people who use them love it, but there's very few of them out there. At least that's been my experience.
Very glad to have that information, Roy. And that correlates very nicely with my guess, which is not real experience. I've not used a 220 repeater. Otherwise, I've made good uses of both 2 meters and 1240 repeaters. I have not used the 1296. And the 1296 repeater, and I think it's located at the World Trade Center, probably has, because of its nice high altitude, reasonably good coverage. But the total number of people with 1200 megacycle equipment is pretty slim. Both good and bad, as you've heard before. Back to you, Andy, for any further questions or comments. This is KD2, Mike Tango Papa. K2RIW, my name is Dick.
Gentlemen, this will hopefully help me decide which way I'm going to go as far as getting a new HD. So I'll just kick it back to you and keep listening and learning. Thank you very much, KD2MTP.
Andy, I'm glad you spoke a little bit louder into your mic. You're now coming up to almost full volume, so to speak. Tiny bit of hiss in the background as to the signal you're giving to the repeater. You're dead full quieting on my input. I didn't look you up, so you must be nearby. And any change you make in the altitude, power, or whatever of your antenna would make you a little bit stronger into this repeater. One of the ways that people have very inexpensively made their signal stronger into a repeater is to build a poor man's Yagi and point it in the right direction. You go to the website of WA5BJB, Whiskey Alpha 5, VictorJulianBravo.com. That's the Kent, Britain, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Actually, Grand Prairie, Texas, near Dallas-Fort Worth. You go to the second or third page of his website where he sells these green printed circuit antennas, and you'll find his designs, very effective designs, that I call coat hanger Yagi antennas, out of very inexpensive materials, coat hanger wire for the elements. You can create a whole lot of gain for a couple of dollars worth of hardware. Aim that Yagi in the right direction, even from the inside of from an apartment, and it'll make you a lot stronger with the repeater. that and anything you do to raise the altitude of your antenna because we dropped it.
Six, see, wait, noise is recorded of what I'm doing.
Okay. So, forgive me for giving you information about noisiness, and it looks like it's not you. But, anything you do to an antenna to make it higher in altitude on VHF or more directivity in the desired direction with a Yagi-like antenna, for instance, is one way to always get a lot more distance, a lot stronger signal, without using a whole lot of power and running.
Repeater, time out.
WD2HWW, let's have it.
Okay, how we recognize. You can always make the signal stronger by adding altitude, adding gain, and inexpensive gain by way of those poor man's cheap antennas, cheap Yagis or whatever you call it, costless antennas. Is that worth the job, worth the effect, worth the effort? The price is right. Go ahead, Howie, WB2HWW, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Hi, just a couple. All right, good evening, everybody. WB2HWW. A couple of comments. 220 is a great band. I have a remote base up there. I also have a couple of link receivers up on that that band, and it works great. I don't know if you would want to use an HD, probably a mobile. It's a great band for mobile operation. You're right. It is not highly used. There's a lot of repeaters. Obviously, you could try 223.5, which that's the common channel. But one thing I would say, Dick, people should use the bands. If you don't use the bands, we're going to lose them. But even though they're not active, just because 2 and 4 is 40, and you know what? Grab your friends and go up to those bands. Also, 1.2 is a fairly good band. Not a lot of activity, but, you know, you're on a couple hundred milliwatts, and you can get 10, 15 mile range into a good receiver at a high spot. There's not a lot of simplex. I use the 1200 meg band mainly for linking, a couple of linking receivers, remote sites. But I have walked around the city with 100 milliwatts, with a Yaesu 1 watt or 100 milliwatts, and get into one of my inputs. So it's 1.2 is a great band, and 220 is also a nice band, Dick.
Okay, glad to hear that, Howie. Thank you for that information. The next person on our list was Angel. My voice is coming out of something in the house. Oh, I think I see what it is. Okay. I think if I... KD2, is it MUG or MUG? One or the other. Angel, you know who you are. Go right ahead, Angel. KD2, MUG, question mark, K2RIW in the TechNet.
And I'm pretty much relegated to this repeater. I've searched with my scope and everything, and I really can't get much. But, maybe I was looking to that Tiki project you're talking about.
Okay. Let us know how that works out when you you make whatever changes you're going to make there, Andy. 82 November Uniform Golf, I think it is. Go right ahead, Angel. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Oh, that was me. Sorry, that wasn't Angel. I just was talking about that.
Scorpion, Romeo, Chetan, and Chewy out.
Now, was that the KD2 November Uniform Golf or Mike Uniform Golf? Or which was it, Angel?
November Whiskey Golf.
Wow. my handwriting is terrible, isn't it? November Whiskey Golf. Okay. Do you have a further question or comment, Angel? Go right ahead. And NTVO recognized. Go right ahead, Angel.
No, that's it. I was going to ask, like I said, for some advice from you guys as to what should be my next project or how can I expand from my apartment and talk to more people and more exposed, and I'm going to go to that site you mentioned and see what I can figure out, if anything.
Yeah, there are people who have the mistaken impression that because they're inside of an apartment, and if they could run a transmission line outside of the apartment and run it up to an antenna on the roof, if the landlord would let you do that, if the super will let you do that, that's going to give you a hell of a lot more performance. But if you happen to be in an apartment where the super or landlord will not let you put an antenna outside the house, hanging out of the balcony or onto the roof, and you can only put antennas inside the house and they can't be visible from outside, and people think that a high-gain antenna is not going to work in that application. It will absolutely. Those inexpensive Yagis, homebrew will coat hanger Yagis, VA5, Whiskey Alpha 5, Victor, Juliet, Bravo, is one kind of Yagi. Another very effective Yagi is the Ra-Ra Yagi, the Rochester Amateur Radio Association. Rochester Amateur Radio Association. You Google those words, and you Google the word tape measure Yagi by way of the tape measure metal strung on pieces of PVC pipe. They've got a very nice foldable three-element Yagi that lots of people have used for doing direction finding and ox hunting and so on. So either of those antennas strung up on a boomstick, put on some kind of a homebrew tripod, let me drop it. Put on some kind of a homebrew tripod inside the apartment in the right direction. In every environment, you would think inside the apartment, because your eye sees nothing but walls and pictures and floor and ceiling and everything, you think that all of that's going to stop the RF energy. Absolutely not. All of that stuff is semi-transparent, and you're always going to be getting multipath. Whether you're putting the antenna inside an apartment or outside the apartment, even on the roof of the building, you're going to be getting multipath. The roof of the building might have some copper sheeting underneath the tar on the roof, which is acting as a reflective material. So any object that's within eyesight or even non-eyesight of the antenna is reflecting some of that signal. Therefore, depending on how you aim the antenna, depending on where you locate the antenna, all of those bounces of those other objects, all of that multipath, will either come out in phase, out of phase, or something in between. Let me drop the three. You get a very strong indication of this if you take a handy talkie while you're listening to a weak repeater, so to speak, and you hold the antenna horizontal, vertical, aim the antenna to the north, south, east, or west, and translate it X, Y, and Z. You'll hear the signal coming and going. You wonder what's going on. All of that signal, whether you're transmitting or receiving, doesn't matter, is bouncing off of every single object. And some of those bounces will give you a signal where there's always multiple signals getting into the antenna. When you're receiving, there may be 5 or 50 different paths by which the signal is getting from the repeater, bouncing off objects, and getting directly to your rubber duct, so to speak. 5 to 50 of them could very well be there. One of them is the direct path, and all the others are indirect paths. And the other paths have got longer and shorter path lengths. Therefore, sometimes the signal comes in phase or out of phase. So as you translate the handy talkie, you'll find places where the signal peaks up or goes into a null. Let me drop it. When I want to listen on my handy talkie in the morning in my bathroom, when I take my handy talkie and put it horizontally on a wooden shelf, on a plastic shelf in my bathroom, I get the strongest signal. Even though I know that this repeater is purely vertically polarized, some of that signal bounces off some kind of an object in my environment, and the horizontal, the vertical signal becomes horizontal. So even after you build this high-gain antenna, try moving it around in various places to find where you get the strongest signal. And in the case of repeaters, it takes a little bit more experimenting, because every repeater has an input frequency that differs from the output frequency. When you translate the antenna to get the strongest signals on reception, it might not be the position that gives you the strongest signal on transmission, because the frequency of the 600 kc separated, for instance, on 2 meters, of 5 megacycles separated on 450. Let me drop. So even though you've put an antenna inside the apartment and you think that that's a terrible environment, it's not. Even though you've aimed it in the right direction, try aiming in all kinds of directions. Even though the repeater is to the east of you, because of the way things are reflecting off your apartment or off the buildings outside, you may get the strongest signal on transmission when you aim the antenna to the northeast, even though the repeater is east of you. So these things seem strange at first, but after you study what multipath reception and transmission is like, multipath propagation, you'll discover that the translating and polarizing, the signal you're listening to right now, for instance, this Yagi antenna you're listening to is slanted at a 45-degree angle to the ground in polarization. It's a 15-element Yagi. And it's not parallel to the ground, it's not vertical. It's slanted at a 45-degree angle in polarization. The boom of the Yagi has been rotated at 45 degrees. That makes me halfway between the horizontal and the vertically polarized people. I can therefore talk to the sideband people or the repeater people. And I'm 3 dB down because of that change, but that's a very good compromise. I can talk to both groups. Let me drop. So, Homebrew Yagi. They give you a lot of performance in a small package, inexpensive components. Let's see, as I said, the Rochester Amateur Radio Association, RARA. You Google those words, and I know that particular article did appear, I think, in one of the past issues of the Limock Log, among other local journals, but about a year ago, they had a beautiful article on how to build these Yagis out of tape measure metal. And so whether you use tape measure metal or whether you use coat hanger wire, in either case, it's inexpensive materials, high performance, and so on. Let's see now. We've gone to Andy. I think we've covered Andy's. Any further questions or comments on what I just told you, Andy? KD2, November Whiskey Golf, I think it is. No, Mike Whiskey Golf. I got terrible writing. Mike Whiskey Golf. You've got it, Andy, if you want any further comments on all of the above.
I made a minute, Dick.
You've got it, Eric. KD2BJ, in command, making changes on the repeater. Go right ahead. RF energy, when it hits a human being, just creates heat. And so, even though it's called RF radiation, a very dangerous sounding word, very different than nuclear radiation. It should have been called radio transmission, radio signaling, instead of RF radiation, but that word scares people. An antenna inside the apartment, unless you, as I said, unless you're running a kilowatt, does not represent a biohazard, in my opinion. Uniform Golf, T2 Roger. Go ahead, Angie.
Okay, so, just to be clear, as you mentioned about being 5 feet away from the antenna, which I'm definitely not, are you saying I should be 5 feet away from it when transmitting, or I don't have to worry about that, because I'm not transmitting at a high power?
Yeah, when I pass it back to you, Angie, wait until you hear the 5 beeps, the 4 beeps, so we don't time out the machine. If you're running 1,000 watts at 2 meters into the antenna, for instance, in the apartment, yeah, stay at least 5 feet away from it. That's a pretty fierce power. But if you're running 30-watt mobile, so to speak, you're probably safe at 3 feet from the front of the Yagi antenna, or 3 feet from a ground plane antenna. So it doesn't take very much distance. If you're running a handy-talkie, obvious by the fact that a handy-talkie has a rubber duck, and it's only inches away from your head when you're using the handy-talkie. It is, in my opinion, a safe antenna. So, only if you're running really high power do you have to be careful about that. You will run into friends of yours who misunderstand the word RF radiation, and they're going to think that because the antenna is in the same house with you, it represents a hazard. We'll discuss that further if you want to, but you're being overly alarmed by the word RF radiation. I'm back to you, Angie, and make sure you wait for the beep.
Yeah, roger that. Thank you. I understand. You've answered my question thoroughly. I appreciate it. Thanks for the info. I guess I have one more question. Does Limon offer any of these, like, do they ever hold, like, I don't know, get together the classes around stuff like this where people can come and just learn?
To be a little bit funny, the answer is yes. For 35 solid years, every single Sunday night, from 8 o'clock till roughly midnight, we hold a get-together of Limon people and non-Limon people on the technical net. That's where you are. This is one of the main get-togethers. 200 hours worth per year for the last 35 years. And you can review all the past material by going to Mike Number One's website, which is amateurradio.tangovictor. You go to the website of amateurradio.tangovictor, choose the right year, the right month, the right week, and you can play back every single TechNet for the last 10 or 11 years. They're all recorded. So there's a huge chunk of information there. Limark is holding a flea market or a hammerama, whatever you're going to call it. I think it's October 29th. It's a Sunday at the end of this month. There's going to be a get-together at Levittown Hall, where you can see these people face to face and talk to them. Let me drop. If you go to Limark.org, their website, you'll find out when each one of their monthly meetings are held. So you can attend a monthly meeting and see people face to face and ask questions. But when it comes to pure technical information being passed back and forth between amateurs, arguably one of the best places is the technical net. Every Sunday night, you're listening to one of them right now. And there's another technical net held on the Kings County Radio Club machine, 146.73, on the second and fourth Wednesday of every month at 9 p.m. So by way of the tech net, the nice thing about this tech net is that you can ask any question of interest to radio amateurs. Let me drop. And you might get more answers here than you would by face-to-face. If you went to a face-to-face meeting, you talk to one, two, or three people at a time. You ask your question here. On some evenings, there are 50 people listening. I bet those 50 people, 10 of them might have information on your particular subject. And depending on how you pose the question, they will chime in and say, this is what I think, this is what worked. I had also tried that, this what doesn't work. So you're allowed to ask as many questions as you want, as many weeks in a row as you want, on any subject, no matter how simple or how complicated. There's no such thing as a dumb question. Our philosophy, let me drop it. Our philosophy is that the so-called dumb question represents the biggest gap between what the person knows and what he wants to know. Therefore, the dumb question is the one most deserving of an answer. We don't have that snooty attitude of, hey, your question doesn't come up to our level, and we're not going to answer it. So you can ask anything you want on any subject of interest to radio amateurs. That includes radio equipment, astronomy equipment, telescopes, sometimes even fishing, because some people use fishing equipment with sinkers in there, and their fishing rod as a way of installing in wire antennas in the trees, if you know any way, and slingshots, and so on. So there's a lot of tie-in between these hobbies. A person who loves sailboating will find ways of using the metal stays on the mast of his sailboat as antennas. Any piece of metal, even the slot on the between the fender and the body of the car, can be built into an antenna, a plainclothes antenna that you won't even see that can give you high performance. Any piece of sheet metal with an interruption somewhere can be made into an antenna if you're smart enough. There are 5,000 kinds of antennas, and I think I'm being conservative when I come up with that number. Back to you, Angel. KD2, Mike Whiskey Golf, K2RIW in the TechNet.
KC2GS.
Stand by, Angel. Go ahead, Roy. And how many of those antennas have you come in contact with? You got it, Roy.
Certainly not as many as I would like. I wanted to just make a couple of points, if I might. The TechMeasure Yagis have a particularly useful quality since they're made out of the tape-measuring materials. They bend and they're very portable, whereas coat hangers, you can bend them only so many times and then you're going to break them. But as much as I love TechNet, and I'm involved now in two of them, Google is your friend. Google things, read up. Don't take everything as the golden rule, and the ARRL has many, 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 many books on antennas and all manner of things, and they're a very good source material. You can get some of them in the library, and you don't have to pay for them that way, but it's nice to invest in a couple of quality books, so that's my 2 cents worth.
Yeah, Roy has hit the nail on the head. In the subject of antennas, arguably one of the most valuable books on planet Earth is the ARRL Antenna Manual. You'll be amazed how many people in the professional world of antenna design, working for the antenna design department at a great big company like Airborne Instruments Laboratory, where a number of those people will have the ARRL Antenna Book on their shelf at work, and they turn it around backwards so that the pages are aimed out and so that the spine of the book is aimed in, because they don't want to admit to their fellow electronic engineers, antenna engineers, that they're using a ham radio manual, because it contains such basic and very useful information. Also, the ARRL Amateur Radio Handbook for Amateur Radio Operators, whatever it's called. A little bit pricey to buy your own copy. I think it's now $40-some-odd. So is the antenna book, but these are nice fat books with 40, 50 chapters and lots of information. And good libraries will have those books. If you don't want to buy it, you can rent it from the library. So the American Radio Relay League in Newington, Connecticut does a lot of publishing. But those are my two favorite books, the antenna book, ARRL handbook. Back to you, Angel. KD2, Mike Whiskey Golf, K2RIW of the TechNet.
It's Kilo Delta 2 November Whiskey Golf. So I want to say a little info back. I really appreciate the time. And I'm going to listen to the rest of the TechNet. Thank you.
Yeah, forgive me, Angel. Looks like I've tried every possible combination out the letters in your call letters. And November Whiskey Golf. I'll eventually get it right. I've written it over and over, darker and darker. I think I've got it right now. Okay, let's go back to Andy and see if he's come back online. Hello, Delta 2, Mike Tango Papa. K2LAW, go ahead, Andy.
K2, Andy here. Yeah, I'm taking it all in. I wrote down the YA5CJC.com. Going to check out the egg. Because right now, I'm using a mobile antenna stuck out my window onto a metal pergola. Put up a Lowe's pergola here outside. A magnetic kind of antenna stuck out there. Oh, you know what? I found myself speaking kind of far from the microphone. My mind just picked up, so hopefully you're going to be better now. I'm using a magnetic mount antenna for my home, which is using a single band mobile. But I wrote down the information you gave me, and yeah, there's a wealth of information going on here, so I'm taking copious notes. Back to you, Dick.
Looks like the beep is sounding a little bit different, Andrew. Glad you're getting information that you can use. I think you really had a question that you want to ask. I'm going to pass it back to you because I don't think I have a chance to ask your question yet. Excuse me, I'm hearing you beautifully. You're living in Massapequa. I'm in Huntington. I'm hearing you very well on the airport. Tonight you're a little bit noisy through the machine, but that's because Eric in KQ2VJ is up at the repeater site making adjustments at this time. And it may not be operating on the usual antenna arrangement. So, you did possibly have another question that we didn't get a chance to ask yet, Andy, and so I'll hand it back to you. 82, Mike Tango Papa, Massapequa, K2LIW, Huntington.
Thank you, Dick, very much. No, I think I'm good. I think my question I was asking about the 220 and the 440. I was asking about getting a new and HD. So there's stuff up there, although there's not as much activities on the detector. But I'm going to pass it back to you, and I'll be on the side listening. 82MT.
You're very fine, Andy. And I made the mistake. It was Joe, Whiskey 2 Oscar Foxtrot Delta, who, when I went over to him, the second person who signed in, who wasn't there at the time. So, Joe, if you're there, go right ahead with your question. Whiskey 2 Oscar Foxtrot Delta, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Hello,
okay, looks like Joe is not there tonight. Okay, we've gone down the list of the people who signed in. Anyone else have any further questions or comments on any of the above? Give me a call, letters, and name right now. K2LIW. Probably just my imagination, but I'm hearing an extremely weak audio signal in there. It's probably coming from some other source. Is there the possibility there's a signal of somebody trying to get through that's not making it? I'm just hearing his audio 40 dB weaker than normal. KE2EJ, if you're there, Eric. K2LIW in the TechNet.
I hear it as well, by the way, Dick. WS2N. I hear it very low.
Yeah, both Paul and I are wearing earphones and we're hearing an extremely weak audio in there. 40 dB weaker than it should be, and we can't make anything out of it. Now, that website, that email address that Roy has had, technet at Alpha Charlie 2 Golf Sierra, phonetically, technet at ac2gs.com. I wonder if you've gotten any email yet, Roy. ac2gs. Right, go ahead, Roy. Let's see if you've seen any American mail yet.
Well, unfortunately, no, nothing yet, but I'm sure we'll have something for next week.
Very good. Okay, as I told you guys earlier, I have to leave before 9:30 to pick up somebody at the airport. So, I'm going to pass it over to Paul right now for the space report, and therefore the rest of the TechNet up until midnight is going to be run by some combination of Paul and Roy from the S2N with the space report, and Roy standing by with any other way he can help if he wants to. I hope he does. So WS2N to take it for now with AC2GS in the wing. K2RIW about to clear within the next 20 minutes. You've got it, Paul.
Okay, very good. Safe driving. And we'll catch you later. I guess you'll probably have a radio on in the car. Let me see if I have it here.
Everything you guys say, so you better be careful.
Copy that. The Garrick did something with the machine. I see the signal came up again. It was down. I'm up probably about a 7, and now it came up back to it full scale again, like it normally does. Very good. Okay, we'll start with SpaceNet report number 271. For the TechNet, and usually what I do is I wait until the end to talk about the next launch that we could watch. But I just want to mention the Wallops Island orbital ATK will launch.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
I know it's about a month away, but. This is one of these launches that we will be able to see from Long Island, providing it's not cloudy out. It's nice and clear, we'll be able to see that. They have a new engine on that engine on the Antares rocket, RS-181, a little bit more powerful. And it should be good. I went out to look at one time I saw it go, another time it failed and blew up a couple of years ago in October, so we didn't get to see that. Let me drop it. It's like a little reddish glow. Most people report a reddish glow when you see it go up, but that'll be November 10th of this month. They're bringing up cargo to the International Space Station. Another launch that's coming up. We won't be able to see. We'll be from California, from Vandenberg Air Force Base. Another Falcon 9 by SpaceX. They're bringing up 10 more Iridium satellites. This is the third time that they've brought up groups of satellites like this. Each time they do it, they bring up 10 Iridium satellites for a total constellation of 66. So they're up to the third group. They get three more to go. And each satellite is a 2,000-pound thing, so when it goes up, you have a live view. You can see the satellites being released one after the other into somewhat of a polar orbit. Each one is, I think, some amount of degrees different than the next one. This way, when they're all in orbit, they'll be able to communicate with each other with your Iridium communication system. And they're launching another 10, so 2,000 pounds each, 20,000 pound payload to a 360 mile orbit. So I thought that was pretty good that they've been so successful. Those boosters from California, when they launch from California now, are all saved. They go out to sea. And they come down and they land on an autonomous ship out of 250 miles or so off the coast of California. It launches to the south, and they have the boat out there ready to receive the SUSE as it comes down vertically. And then they try to reuse them. They've reused two of them already. They've recaptured 17 of them. Some have come back and landed on land. And some land on the autonomous ships. So they're getting very good at